are listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
Oh, Eric D. Snyder and Jeff Mayer. They'll see all the movies to tell you which you should watch later. You have seen as many movies as these two. So they'll know the right way to steer you. Movie BS is what I suggest when you're planning a cinema night.
Hello, welcome to Movie BS with Bayer and Snyder, the internet's only movie podcast. I'm your host, Eric T. Snyder, here with my sidekick, Jeff Bayer.
I am the sidekick for that second alone. I'm the co-host of Movie BS with Bayer and Snyder. That was my sidekick, Eric T. Snyder.
Whatever.
Thank you. Welcome. Hello.
Hi, everybody. Right off the bat, we need to make a correction, an urgent correction to the record.
Do we have the beep, 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 beep,
mm-hmm. from last week's show?
Whoosh, and then you tear it off, and then right. You come running into the room, and you hand you the piece of paper. All right, go ahead and read your statement, sir.
Well, last week we were talking about, I don't know what, movies, probably.
And
Fistfight. Oh, the movie Fistfight, yes. And Jeff mentioned a movie that he believed featured Louis Gossett Jr. and Jim Belushi called Principles. And I said, no, that's not a movie. Because you said they have a baseball bat. I said, no, the baseball bat one is either Stand and Deliver or Lean on Me,
mm-hmm.
whichever one of those, because I get those two mixed up. Also about principles.
And then we started talking about a few other potentials.
We tracked down, like Nick Nolte movie called Teachers. Well, it turns out, I hope you're sitting down, there is a movie with Louis Gossett Jr. and Jim Belushi called Principle. It's an actual movie, and it does involve a baseball bat.
Yep, that's right.
So,
in fact, it's right there on the cover of the DVD.
I've never heard of this movie. It came out in 1987.
I'm convinced I've seen it.
You've at least seen the poster, because it has a bat.
I think it was like, this is nice Iowa suburban high school that I'll be attending. Seems pretty nice in comparison.
So my apologies for doubting you that there was a Louis Gossett Jr. Jim Belushi movie called Principal.
Well, it's funny because then when I discovered it, you told me your behind the scenes thinking, which was, oh, Jeff.
Yeah, I figured Louis Gossett Jr. Okay, no, you're thinking of either Edward James Olmos or right. Morgan Freeman, and Jim Belushi. I don't know who you meant to say there, but whatever. I'll just let that one go. But turns out, no, the actual Jim Belushi is in this movie, Principal. So, and it came out 87, which is about the same time as Stand and Deliver and Lean on Me. Mm-hmm. I guess we had a big run of principal oriented movies, high school movies.
We have an iTunes review.
Hey, yeah, we do.
You know what that means, people? That means Eric opens up his little chest of creativity and speaks to you in old-time radio voice.
This is written by Ghost Nebula, and he or she writes, two thumbs up. Been listening to these guys for a couple years now. Good stuff. Keep it up. Short and to the point. Thank you, Ghost Nebula.
You are only saying that because somebody else was kind enough.
Somebody wrote a very long. Maybe I'll copy and paste it on a Facebook or something.
Maybe we'll take turns. Maybe we'll get through it eventually.
It's great, but it's like 1,000 words long. And old timey radio voice.
Wait,
you know,
seriously, it's 1,000?
Not 1,000. A couple hundred though.
Okay.
Old time radio voice. I'll give you a little secret. A little bit of it goes a long way. We would all be tired of it by the end.
Never even considered that for one second, Eric. I never even thought that was possible, that I could ever tire of that thing you do.
Yeah. Just you wait. I can make you tired of it. Don't
Get
challenge
out.
Me. Don't
Get
challenge
out.
Me.
Get out.
There's a movie called Get Out.
You guys weren't able to see the face.
Cool.
Where
that's amazing.
Registered.
Oh, man. Good call. Well, we might as well review it.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, let's. How about half of us review it?
Oh, because maybe one of us didn't see it.
Well, my only chance, apparently, which is surprising to both of us, would have been midnight at Sundance.
Would have been the special magic secret screening at Sundance. It was a secret screening, and I saw it there and wrote a review there. And I'm glad I did, because now it screened in a lot of places, but it did not screen in Portland or Seattle or Salt Lake City, to name three markets that I know of. And there could be a few reasons why they wouldn't have screened it in these places. One could be it's kind of a horror movie, and studios, including Universal, always kind of don't know what to do with horror movies, and sometimes they underplay them. Also, those three markets don't have a lot of black people, and that's in right. the past, movies that are aimed at black audiences sometimes don't screen in really white cities.
Tyler Perry.
Yeah, yeah. Lionsgate used to be the worst at that, and it surprised me that it's Universal.
This is Universal, right? Yeah, that's
big-time stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just a cheapness thing. I don't know. But speaking as a freelance writer who wrote a review at Sundance and is now able to sell parts of it to various places who don't have reviews because of no local screenings, I say thank you, Universal. Because I am cashing
cash
in.
Cow. Mm-hmm. Cash cow.
Mm-hmm. But it means since you didn't see it at Sundance, you couldn't see it. We assumed you'd be able to see it here in Portland, but no. So let me just tell you everything that happens in it.
Thank you. Good.
It was written and directed by Jordan Peele.
That's right.
I think we talked about this at Sundance. But or maybe some listeners didn't listen to those episodes because we told them they were allowed to skip them. Written and directed by Jordan Peele, who is married to Chelsea Peretti in real life.
Who's also, she's pregnant.
Oh, good for her. Good for them.
Yeah.
Glad to hear it. Also, she's a white lady. And Jordan Peele insists that this movie is not based on his wife's family. He wrote and directed this, and it's about a young man named Chris, played by Daniel Kaluuya, who I've not seen before. Handsome young black actor. And he's got a white girlfriend, played by Allison Williams.
Handsome
young white lady, yeah. And they are going to meet her affluent family in their fancy little neighborhood. And she, Rose is her name. She has not told her parents that her boyfriend is black, but she insists they're so progressive and so liberal. The only problem is going to be how much her dad talks about how much he loves Obama.
And this is Dean and Missy, Bradley Whitford and Catherine Keener.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are her parents. On paper, that's a fantastic parenting couple right there.
Also fantastic on celluloid or on whatever movies they're made out of now. They're super welcoming and gracious. And yeah, sure enough, Dad's all about how he loves Obama. His claim to fame is that his father lost to Jesse Owens in a 1936 Olympics pretrial.
Nice.
Things like that. This is a movie about racism that not about like Trump racism, cracker racism, but liberal, unintended racism, the well-meaning people who think they're on the right side, but are wind up being condescending and racist.
The people who say I have black friends.
That
type of vibe. Is that the,
that kind of thing. Who really are well-meaning here in this fancy neighborhood. There's no, it's really all white people that live there, except for the maids and groundskeepers are black. And the dad, Bradley Whitford, he feels kind of embarrassed about that. But he's, you know, they worked for my parents before they died and they're part of the family. So, you know, but he gets it. You know, I'm a rich white guy hiring black guys, black people. I know that's weird. But all the black servants are unusually deferential and mild mannered, like Stepford wives.
Okay.
And so there's more weirdness when the whole extended family and neighbors arrive for a big summertime gathering.
Oh, wait, I have a question because you said horror, and you would classify this as a horror comedy, I'm assuming, correct?
Yeah, it's more comedy than horror.
More comedy than horror. Is that the first inkling of horror when the or is there some like scary moments that are just kind of thrown out there for fun effect? Like,
no, there's a prologue. To the movie that establishes that there will be horror.
Okay.
And then even when we see the maid and the groundskeeper being really kind of spookily obedient, it's still not horror. There's really not any horror elements until later. More of an uneasiness, like, wait, what is up here? And all the other white people in the neighborhood are the same way. You know, they make sure to tell Chris that Tiger Woods is their favorite golfer, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he comes to wonder what's going on here. What is the deal with this neighborhood here? And then things start to go wrong. It's mostly, like I said, it's mostly comedy and mostly very funny in the way that it makes fun of. It's all kind of based around the not quite a joke that many black people talk about, where the suburbs are like this eerie twilight zone for black people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's not a one joke movie at all. It really gets into that, finds humor in those fears without dismissing them. And it mocks, like I said, white liberal cluelessness. And then it does become, there are these thriller elements sprinkled throughout it. There's the mom, Catherine Keener, is a psychiatrist, and there's a hypnosis scene that's really trippy.
Okay.
Very trippy. And then the plot turns to like actual horror, and it's well done.
This is rated R, right?
It is rated R. Language. There's language for a while, and then in the last, you know, in the last act where the horror really turns on, Jordan Peele, first of all, you can tell he wants to make horror. Like he's good at it. It's not like an afterthought for him.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah. The fact that he could
It was Drew McWeeny, and I can't remember if he actually like knew it firsthand or if he had heard too, but a while ago he was telling me this.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can tell he's really into it. And he handles the scary stuff really well. And he's not afraid to deliver some violence when it's called for. But really what's most impressive is that he puts these themes of racial equality into this subversive satire that feels like just a standard old date night horror comedy.
Okay.
It's this date night horror comedy with these bigger ideas buried into it. And he does it all without being angry. The movie doesn't come across as angry per se. Not that this will stop, you know, Fox News from calling him an angry black man, but it's biting, but it's good natured. And I think it's really funny.
We haven't mentioned some of the cast. I'm really curious about a few of them. Lakeith Stanfield, who I love from Atlanta. He played Andrew Logan King. Small part, I'm assuming.
Lakeith Stanfield, it's a crucial part. Not big, but crucial. He's one of the one black guy who lives in the neighborhood. He's the second husband of an old white lady. But he dresses like he's her age. Yeah, he's like really, really become a white person.
And then I'm assuming Dean and Missy also have a son named Jeremy, and that's by the ever creepily Caleb Jones.
Yeah, Caleb Landry Jones plays their son, Rose's brother. He serves no function in the story.
Yeah, okay.
Didn't need to be there.
Oh, and Stephen Root.
Stephen Root is a blind guy there in the community. The film reminded me a little bit of the Shaun of the Dead and the Hot Fuzz, those movies, in that many of the jokes are setting up for later in the story.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out to have a very well-conceived worldview, and the whole conspiracy thing is all well put together and well foreshadowed. And it's quite well done. I give it a B+, Get Out.
Ooh!
Mm-hmm. And then the other movies that happened this weekend. There's one called Rock Dog. It's a cartoon.
We simply said no. I guess, were you out of town?
I was out of town. The screening, I think, was Saturday morning, and I was gone.
Would you have said yes to Rock Dog?
I don't remember. Where was the screening? It depends on the time and where
it was.
I think
it was Bridgeport
at
11 a.m.
I might have done that. Yeah, I probably would have done that. Rock Dog, cartoon about a dog that becomes a rock star, I think. I believe it's all various animals decide to sing. What I know is that there's a Sam Elliott is the voice of Fleetwood Yak, which I guess is a yak who's, you know, rock star.
Yeah, we got Luke Wilson, Eddie Izzard, J.K. Simmons. But
a fine cast, I'm sure, but Rock Dog. Yeah, and then also another thing called Collide. You ever heard of this movie, Collide?
This is the first I am aware of it.
Yeah, it opens 2,500 screens this weekend. Wide release, full wide release.
Oh, wait.
Nicholas
I saw
Holt,
a preview of this.
Felicity
I saw
Jones.
A preview of this, yes. And Anthony Hopkins.
And Ben Kingsley.
And so this movie...
Do you remember, by the way, there was a time, not that long ago, when if you saw the movie had Anthony Hopkins and Ben Kingsley, oh, that must be a prestigious, what a fancy movie that's going to be.
Times are a-changing.
Yeah.
There was, what was the Joseph Gordon-Levitt movie where he was just like on a bike and Michael Shannon was...
Oh, Premium Rush.
As well. Yes. That is a good movie that just totally went under the radar that nobody bothered with. I thought it was really tight.
Mm-hmm.
And for the preview, when I finally realized what I was watching and everything, it was just like, what if it could be? What if it could be as good as that? I doubt it is.
Does it look like it? Is this also about people being chased or something?
Yes, it looked like it was.
Yeah. An American backpacker gets involved with a ring of drug smugglers in Germany. All right. Sounds fun. Anyway, not screened for critics.
Not screened.
But I did see a movie that opened last week. The Great Wall.
So I have a question with The Great Wall.
Yeah.
It was last week. It was being screened on a Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm.
I decided not to go because I would have had to get another babysitter.
Right.
I think at about 4 p.m. I was at the gym.
Yeah.
And on one of the TVs was the preview playing. That is the first time that I knew that this movie was not simply based on the building of the Great Wall of China, starring Matt Damon.
Yeah, the title you think is going to be like a history of the Great Wall. No, it's not.
Yeah.
And the first, right off the bat, the movie says that, you know, the Great Wall of China has inspired many stories, some true and some not. This is one of the legends, it says. So right off the bat, we don't have to worry about this being historically accurate. Mm-hmm. And that would have been obvious anyway when the green reptilian monsters showed up.
Now, hang on a second. Hmm. I know there's like lizards and whatnot on this earth. Maybe they used to be really big.
Maybe, but not this big. They're like velociraptor size, these.
Hmm.
And it's set around 1000 AD, and Matt Damon and a guy named Pedro Pascal are a couple of European mercenaries wandering around China. They're looking for the black powder, which is to say gunpowder, that China is rumored to have invented. And while they're wandering around, they get attacked by one of these strange creatures, and Matt Damon manages to slice off its claw. And then they get captured by the Chinese army.
Why?
Because they're not supposed to be there, because they're outsiders.
Oh, okay.
Just, you know, they're defending the wall. They're called the Nameless Order, this military unit called the Nameless Order. And they protect the wall. And they want to know how Matt Damon was able to kill one of these things so easily.
Wait, did he kill him or did he just slice off a finger?
That wasn't clear. He sliced off a claw anyway, but even that apparently was more than they're usually able to do. Okay. And it turns out he may have unwittingly found a way to defeat them. I'm not going to spoil anything, but it involves magnets. Magnets play a central role in the story.
What?
So Matt Damon and the other guy are here, and they meet all these. Now you're starting to think, oh, this is going to be one of those stories where some white guys show up and show these poor, dumb locals how to solve their own problem that they've had forever. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's not like that.
Oh, really?
For one thing, one of the guys isn't interested in helping. The one who's not Matt Damon doesn't care. He just wants to find some gunpowder and skedaddle.
Your typical not Matt Damon kind of person, right there.
Exactly. But then also, the Nameless Order here, they are badass. They are well-prepared and disciplined. These monsters, they're called Tao Te, is the Mandarin name for them. They every 60 years, they show up and in swarms and attack the wall. Mm. And so these military people have been preparing.
And they're saying this is why the wall exists, to keep the monsters out? Is that what they're saying?
That might have been part of the story that I didn't quite get. It might not have been.
can the monsters jump over the wall?
They can't. No, because the wall is like 50 feet high.
No,
And the monsters are like,
Eric,
you know,
Eric,
8 feet high.
I know how tall the wall is. Well, I was just curious if maybe this is why they built the wall, but then they're still trying to, like, you know, keep these monsters at bay.
I believe the wall was built to keep out many enemies, including these monsters.
Okay.
But anyway, so the things will come along and they'll like try to like climb up the wall, like stack on top of each other and stuff. But right. So the military people, they're launching fireballs. They got a platoon of archers, really well-trained archers shooting at them. These people have been training their whole lives for this moment every 60 years when the things are going to come attack.
And now it's just like magnets. Everybody hand out some magnets.
Well, there's my favorite one, the Crane Corps. It's women. It's a platoon of women. And they basically go out under these planks, like they're walking the plank off the edge of the wall.
Okay.
And they essentially jump, bungee jump off the wall down to the ground with spears, stab up some monsters for a couple of seconds before they get yanked back up again.
That's great.
Yeah, it's great. It's pretty awesome. And all this stuff, it's big,
hang on a second.
Big grand scale battles like Lord of the Rings kind of stuff. So very, so
minute,
much fun
wait
to watch.
A minute.
What?
What? I just hadn't heard any good buzz about this movie, and now I'm like so annoyed that I didn't see it yet.
No, here's what everyone – here was the buzz about this movie. Oh, Matt Damon's a star of a movie about the Great Wall of China. Whitewashing, right. Whitewashing, racist.
Yes. Yes.
And because it, everyone also, like you, thought, oh, it's about the history of the Great Wall of China. That's kind of dumb to have a, be about a white guy, which I agree with. But it's not that. It's a story set in medieval – pre-medieval China. A fantasy with monsters, and Matt Damon helps the army, but they all work together. It's not like they're totally incompetent without him.
You know what they should have called this movie? The Monster Wall.
The Monster Wall. Monsters Attack the Wall.
I see the Monster Wall. What do you mean the Monster Wall? The wall is made of monsters? No, it's something else.
That's misleading in its own way. But yes, yes.
All right, now here's a problem with this entire review.
What?
You haven't mentioned Willem Dafoe.
He doesn't do much. He's another European who came to this area 25 years ago and never left.
He doesn't play a Chinese man?
No. Yeah. No. He's another white guy. He doesn't figure into the story too much. There are a few superfluous ideas here and there that are kind of half-developed, and his character is one of them. I think it's probably the consequence of the movie being the work of six writers. Three guys are credited with the story, and then three totally different people for the screenplay. So it obviously went through a lot of revisions and reworking and stuff. And there's really nothing special about the dialogue or the characters. But it's all about Zhang Yimou. Yimou is the director. He made Hero and House of Flying Daggers, which you haven't seen, are great. He's all about the spectacle of these fearsome monsters and the big color-coordinated armies, and there's experimental hot air balloons, and there's stuff with the gunpowder, and it's all really quite fun. Slightly ludicrous, but not in an eye-rolling kind of way. More in a, hey, this is fun kind of way.
The XXX sequel should have been.
Probably.
And on rare occasion was. Oh, that's right, you haven't seen that one.
Great Wall, it's a B. It's a nice, solid B.
Wow!
Yep. Huh. Plenty of fun. Plenty.
I should see some movies sometime.
Yeah.
Because they sound good, movies. They sound like a lot of fun.
Some are. Don't go overboard.
All right.
And now a word from our sponsor.
Do you know how sexy it is to produce movie BS with Bear and Snyder?
No. Tell me more.
You need bandwidth.
Mm.
Microphones.
Mm.
The internet.
Go on.
Plus there's time. Time to see the movies and record and edit the show so it sounds like Jeff and Eric know exactly what they're talking about.
That is sexy. Can I give that show a dollar?
Sure you can. Go to moviebs.com and click on the Patreon link. It's like stuffing a dollar bill down the podcast pants.
Oh yeah. And now back to the show. Some new DVDs this week are as follows.
Everybody pens out.
Ready? Bad Santa 2. In case you want to relive the spirit of the season.
Do you remember that we had a choice?
We did.
We had a choice, but do you remember what the other one was? It's okay if it doesn't come to you.
I don't remember, but yeah, we had to choose.
Chose poorly. We remember that.
Well, we chose the worst of the two, but it was also the other thing was something that we knew we would get a screener of.
Oh, okay.
And we did. So it turned out. I think it was Allied. Was it Allied? I think it was that Brad Pitt movie, Allied.
Yes. Yes, it was. It was totally Allied.
There we go. Bad Santa 2 is not very good. Although I gave it a C+. I remember it had funny things.
It did.
And Kathy Bates as Billy Bob Thornton's mom.
That was it. It was the Kathy Bates, Billy Bob Thornton combo that was worthwhile for that film.
Can you see? It's the kind of movie I would say, hey, rent it for a dollar on Redbox, you filthy yokels.
What is one of our listeners to the hashtag? What was it? Redbox?
Redbox Rubes, probably, I think.
It was good, whatever it was.
But would you rent a Bad Santa 2 in February, or would you wait until next Christmas season?
I would want somebody that edit together just the 20 minutes.
But assuming that's not going to happen.
Then you wait a year.
That's what I would think. Yeah, you go ahead and wait. Yeah. What else? Hacksaw Ridge, Oscar nominated. Hacksaw Ridge.
Many times over. Very surprising. It was very surprising. It was surprising because it was just like, oh, Mel Gibson's. We're accepting him back.
And
because
it's like not a very good movie. It's okay.
I was taken with it. I did like it, and I was surprised it won me over.
Remember when Andrew Garfield was a grinning hillbilly in that movie?
Yeah,
he was like Forrest Gump. Forrest Gump goes to war.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Forrest Gump did go to war.
To a different war.
There you go.
Remember how he got nominated for an Oscar for that?
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. Manchester by the Sea, another Oscar-nominated movie. This one's actually really good, though.
Do you want to have some fun this weekend?
Yeah.
I don't recommend watching this in a bathtub with a razor blade nearby.
No. Well, why? I mean, why would you?
I'm just saying.
What movie would you recommend watching in a bathtub with a razor blade nearby?
Maybe Shawshank Redemption, because there'd be many times where you're like, well, this is it. This is the worst it can get. I'm going to end it. But then at the end of the movie, it's just filled with so much wonderful hope.
That's true.
And then maybe you would be like, yeah, I'll save you for another day, razor blade.
I was going to say Anchorman, probably because my answer for everything is Anchorman, just like your answer for everything is Shawshank Redemption. That's your solution to all life's problems.
Yeah.
Oh, and Nocturnal Animals is out this week as well, nominated for a few lesser Oscars.
Are you like me, where you're just like, I did see it and like it, right? Like, only because that's a movie that I feel like a lot of critics have decided to pile on some hate with.
A lot of critics did not like it, which I completely respect. I don't – when I hear people that hated Nocturnal Animals, I don't think, what? How could you hate that? Like, I get it.
It feels weird to bash Tom Ford, in my opinion. But I guess, yeah.
Well.
I think it's aesthetically a good-looking movie, and I think everything that is the fiction within the fiction is really good.
Yeah, I think it's a fine film. I would watch that again. I would watch that again.
I don't need Amy Adams. I don't need to watch Amy Adams read.
Well,
I don't need that.
I do. Fine. More of her reading for me then.
Yeah, you can have twice as much.
Well, and also this weekend, if you don't feel like going out to the movies, it's the Oscars.
That's right.
It's like the 130th annual Oscars. And Oscar bowling, we recapped last week, the Oscar bowling. We'll be doing that.
We'll be doing that. We'll be putting our picks up on Facebook, our Facebook page. You can get to by going to moviebs.com, and you'll see the little Facebook icon, and that's how that thing works.
You know how the internet works.
And we have the rules and everything else explained there.
I've got it. Here you go. You guess who's going to win each category, then you rank your guesses according to how confident you are.
And the most confident
gets 24 points down to
least confident gets one.
Right. And you add them all up, and it's a potential of 300 points.
Hence, and Oscar bowling.
I believe traditionally I lose. Traditionally, I do not do as well at this as you do.
This is fun.
Do you have the old results?
All right, Eric. So the first year we did this was 2011.
All right.
Jeff, 246. Eric, 225. 2012, Jeff, 256. Eric, 228.
All right.
2013, Jeff, 257. Eric, 196.
Ooh, that was a bad one.
2014, Jeff, 271. Eric, 266. Your best ever.
That was close.
Just not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
2015, Jeff, 208. Oh, that's not good. Sounds like Eric has a chance here. Eric, 204.
Ooh, another close one.
Close one.
But then last year.
I don't live in the past.
You got 246. I got 257. I finally had my first victory last year.
That's right. So the overall statistics, since you guys asked, it's 5-1. I'm winning. My average score is 247. Yours is 229. The longest winning streak is five by me. Mm-hmm. And the lowest score ever, again, that 196 where he didn't even clear 200.
Yeah.
I'm going for 272. That's my goal this year.
Okay.
I'm going to get the highest I've ever gotten.
All right.
What's your goal?
My goal is 300. I'm going to get them all right. That's my goal.
Okay. All right.
You guys can play along at home. You're sort of on the – we can't really play in real time because it's because the show isn't live. And I mean, our show isn't live. The Oscars are live, but this podcast isn't live. So just after the fact, you can tell us how many points you got. You're sort of on the on the honor system, like not to cheat and change your answers and all that.
Yeah, yeah. It's easy to, you know, you can just follow our comment stream on the Facebook and with our picks, and you can add your score. Or if you want, you can, like, you know, if you're like, no, I'm going to get 300. I need to make sure that this is out here beforehand. You can, in a comment, put your picks in there as well. Whatever you need. Whatever you need to do.
We trust you not to pretend to have done better than you did at this dumb game. Oh. Just to impress us.
When Eric creates a game, that's pretty amazing. He doesn't call it dumb.
No, all games are dumb. I mean, when you get down to it. That's all. Meaningless would be a better word. Meaningless. And then one more thing to report on. I was in Oxford, Mississippi last weekend.
On purpose?
Yeah, on purpose. Flew into Memphis. That's where you fly to go to Oxford. And this is
really?
It's about an hour and 20 minutes north of Oxford.
How'd you get there then to Oxford?
Well, they have automobiles. Yeah, no, someone came along and picked me and a few others up.
Okay, that was what I was curious about. I mean, yeah. You know, you're kind of a big deal down there.
This is my ninth year.
How they were treating you?
They treat me very well. It's my ninth year being invited down to the Oxford Film Festival as a judge or panelist. And yeah, it's nice. You know, they fly out and put you up in a hotel. This year, I actually was not even on any of the juries. This year, I was just doing some Q&As at some screenings, and I helped screen some of the pre-screen some of the films a few months ago, and then I also hosted the awards ceremony. So mostly, I was just—it's already pretty much a vacation because other festivals were working. You know, I'm covering it. I'm writing reviews and stuff. Oxford, no, I'm just there to help out, and so I don't. Other than the movies that I have to see for whatever I'm judging, I don't have to see anything. So I can just hang out, eat food, eat myself into food comas. I did see a few movies. One that is good that y'all should pay attention, keep an eye out for, a documentary called Midnight Return. And this is about, remember the movie Midnight Express?
A little bit.
True story about an American, young American man got caught trying to smuggle hashish out of Turkey and went to Turkish prison. You ever been to a Turkish prison? Is where that line comes from, and based on a true story. And the real guy that it happened to, he's still alive, named Billy Hayes, and this Midnight Return is about him now going back to Turkey, trying to patch things up. I knew Midnight Express was a big hit film in 78, and nominated for Oscars and stuff, and Oliver Stone, I think, won the screenplay award for it. But it also totally wrecked things with Turkey. Like, people in Turkey hated America and hated the movie because it made Turkey look so bad. And all the Turks are villains and everything. And apparently Oliver Stone took some liberties with the screenplay that were not in the book that Billy Hayes had written. And some of the most inflammatory stuff in the movie is stuff that did not happen in real life. And so this was about Billy now, you know, picking up his life after all that happened and then after the movie and everything. And it's a very good documentary because it's a behind the scenes of Midnight Express. And then it's also the ongoing story.
Oh, they've got a lot of old footage.
Some of the old footage and then the ongoing what he did after the movie came out and everything. And Billy Hayes was there along with the filmmakers and did a Q&A. Very nice guy. He's like, he's close. He must be 70, close to 70. And he's thin and spry and does yoga. Yeah. And he was a nice guy.
So at what age can you call someone spry? Like, how old do they have to be?
Yeah, I don't know. I am over 50, I think.
Really?
I think if you're under 50 and spry, then it's not noteworthy.
Man, I think a lot of 50-year-olds would be offended.
What? That they...
Like, by being referred to as spry.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. I don't make the rules. I'm just saying how
it
works.
I feel like you just made that rule.
Mm-mm, no, I was citing an already existing rule.
Oh, okay.
There was also a locally made film there in Oxford called Kudzu Zombies. Are you familiar with kudzu? It's a plant. It's an invasive vine that grows in the South. It was brought to the South like a century ago. I forget why. Someone in Mississippi explained it once. But now it's just a pest crop, and like people have their goats eat it and stuff. It's just something that's everywhere in Mississippi. This kudzu vine, and Kudzu Zombies is a very low budget zombie movie where people turn into zombies and then kudzu sprouts out of them. And it, this was fun to go to the screening because it was the world premiere, and I a couple other jury members and I were like the only ones in the theater who were not involved with the movie in any way. So that was fun to be there at the premiere, and it's actually an enjoyable movie. There are several things that I enjoyed about the movie unironically.
Okay.
Several that I enjoyed ironically because they're bad and stupid, but also some genuinely – there's some genuine creativity, and they did some nice effects with their limited resources, and so that was fun. I feel like Kudzu Zombies could be one of those – could survive in the straight-to-DVD or video-on-demand market for cheap zombie movies. So good for them, those locals. Also, the one of the producers of the movie was very nervous about the premiere, so he got super drunk beforehand.
Oh.
Just very, very gregarious, sloppy drunk. And so he was not heckling his own movie, but he was he was not afraid to just say things. To him, it felt like a cast and crew screening.
Oh, he was talking during the film.
Yeah, during the film there.
Oh.
And sitting next to him was someone else, the director maybe, someone else heavily involved in the film who kept texting, had his phone out texting. And I thought, you know, this is very inspiring. These guys have not... don't have a lot of experience making movies, yet they are already talking and texting their way through their own premiere like Hollywood seasoned Hollywood veterans.
Yeah, man.
Like they've been at it for years.
What was the best thing you ate?
Oh, Gus's Fried Chicken. Gus's Fried Chicken is a small chain in Memphis, and I guess it just recently –
I know of this place.
Have it recently opened in Oxford, and they catered one of the parties – and delicious fried chicken. Oh, delicious. Something in it. It's just a hint of spiciness. And I don't know what all is involved. Crack cocaine, probably. Delicious. I ate my weight in that stuff. That was good. And some other – there was a local bakery that supplied freshly baked cookies, too.
Nice.
That was great. All in all, very fun, nice people. I got to host the award ceremony, which was a great honor. They threw me off. Usually, it's always been a Saturday night thing, and it's a big raucous party affair. This year, it was a Saturday brunch. And I suspect you know my thoughts on brunch, first of all.
Yeah, but you're not waiting in line.
I know, it's true. I don't have to wait in line. But just the idea of having to get up, having to you know, set my alarm to get up to
what
go somewhere
was
on a Saturday.
Brunch?
Like 9.
All right.
On a Saturday, after we've been up late partying Friday night.
Right.
You know?
And you're like working the event. Did you work the crowd well? Did you get some laughs?
I did. Yes. It all. I was a little nervous, but not nervous. I wondered how it was going to be being a morning mm-hmm. crowd. But no, there were people were into it, and you know, I killed, and it.
one day I'm going to have to come down there and see this. Festival. One day.
You should. I'll see if I can get them to invite you.
One day.
But no, I had a very nice time down there in Mississippi. Oxford, Mississippi. A fine place. And wherever you guys live, there's probably a small regional film festival near you. Most cities of any size have something. Some kind of film festival. And you should support it. Wherever you are, you should seek it out and go see it. Because you'll see movies that you won't see anywhere else. Sometimes that's because those movies aren't any good. But they have they may have a local flavor or local angle, and it's just a fun experience. And it's good to support your local artistic endeavors and all that. And you know, so wherever
when you do it, it typically does feel important. Mm-hmm. Like you can, there's a little energy that surrounds it that it just feels good to partake in.
Hey Jeff, you know what?
What?
It's the end of the show.
It is the end of the show.
Yeah.
Hey Eric, if people mm-hmm. wanted to know more about Eric D. Snider, where would they go?
Well, just ask my mom. Just call her. Her number is 951-674. No, you can go. I'm on Twitter at Eric D. Snider. My website is ericdsnider.com. I write movie reviews, you know.
Mm-hmm. I hear.
And I'm the editor over at crookedscoreboard.com, which is a sports website that's becoming a movie website. It's transitioning. So check out some things there if you want to. Jeff, where are you?
On Twitter, I'm at Bayer Jeff.
It's backwards from your name.
It is. It's backward. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get the jeffbayer@gmail.com, and I went backward, and I just haven't turned back.
Mm. Gotcha.
There you go. I might do some freelance writing here and there on occasion, but man, it's rare.
You're a dad. You're a full-time dad.
No, I know.
Yeah, you don't need to like apologize or feel bad for not writing reviews or whatever.
I could kill myself and do something more. But anyway, I also have a radio spot if you guys are in Portland, KPM 860 AM on Thursday mornings.
What time Thursday mornings are you on?
Typically, it is 8:20 AM.
Forget it.
Yeah, if you're not waking up for brunch at 9 a.m., forget that. Meanwhile, I've been up for like 2 hours already.
I know. Easily. You and I live very different lives.
Such different lives.
And so to recap, what do we want? Oh, Get Out is good.
So I hear.
Get Out's a good horror comedy. And The Great Wall is pretty good.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, you heard it from me.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, just a few minutes ago on this show, we were talking about
it. That's right. Yeah. Now it's coming back. Yep.
So until next week for Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Bear.
Thanks for listening and good day.
Good day.